Welcome to this week's episode of The Homeschool How-To. I'm Cheryl, and I invite you to join me on my quest to find out, why are people homeschooling? How do you do it? How does it differ from region to region? And should I homeschool my kids? Stick with me as I interview homeschooling families across the country to unfold the answers to each of these questions week by week. Welcome. With us today, we have Nikki from New York, and Nikki is also with FreeChildhood.com. Welcome, Nikki. Thank you for being here.
Hi. Thanks so much for having me, Cheryl.
Now, you are a homeschool mom currently, correct?
Yes, I am.
And why don't we start just first off, what got you into homeschooling and also how many kids you have and their ages?
Okay. So I have one daughter. She's six. And to make a long story a little bit shorter, I have been a public school teacher here on Long Island in New York for 20 years. And working within the system for such a long time, I started to have some serious problems with just a lot of things with the school system. And so in my mind, when my daughter was born, I thought that she was going to go to the public school down the street. I even contemplated possibly becoming a principal of that school. It's not the district I work in. However, I had some connections there and I thought about switching over. And I had this like vision in my mind that we would walk to school together every day and, you know, I'd be the principal and she'd be one of the students and it would be lovely. And as she started to get closer and closer to that age, maybe around 3 years old, 4 years old, I started to say, no, I don't want her in that school setting. And she was, because I did stay home with her for 3 years, and then I had to, my job was like, you either have to come back or resign, and I didn't feel like resigning was an option, so I came back, and I went back for 3 years, so I was there from the time she was almost three to almost six, and she was with my husband part-time and at this beautiful farm preschool program that was not academic, it was all play-based, and just outside, lovely. I know I'm not making a long story short. I'm making a long story longer,
no,
but it was it was just an amazing setting, and it really aligned with everything I kind of had in my mind of this like childhood utopia. And I was like, this is exactly what is wrong with the public school and why I don't want her to go there. So as she was at this place flourishing, and by the way, it broke my heart every day to leave for work and leave her, you know, even though I knew she was in the best place and in, you know, my husband's hands and with these people at the school, I just missed that I wasn't spending the time with her. And it like broke my heart every day. And she would come visit me at lunch because her days were half days. And it was just so hard. It was hard on both of us. Even though she also loved what she was doing, she missed me too. And it was just not an easy transition at all. So all of these factors were playing in, you know, into it. And so as she started to get closer, maybe around 4 years old, I had already made this decision that she was staying at the farm for as long as possible. And the farm program allows the kids, it's a 3 to 5 year old mixed age program. So I knew she would be there until, you know, she finished her fifth year. But so as she was probably about four, I started to look for private schools because in my mind it was like, okay, if public school is not the option, private school is the option. Mm-hmm. The thing is, on Long Island, most private schools look very much like public schools. And I'm sure this is probably the case in most places, but I think you would assume that Long Island would have a lot more options because New York City absolutely does. But we actually don't. Most of our private schools are really just a replica of public school, except people are paying a price tag to put their kids there. So I wasn't interested in a traditional looking private school, which left me with very few options. And I went and visited the few options that I did have, and they just weren't going to work. They were so far away. It was going to be a huge commute. It was, you know, paying for school for the next 13 years. There was just a lot of reasons why I was like, you know what, I just feel like this option isn't really that feasible for our family. So I started to explore the idea of homeschool. I was like, you know, I've been a teacher for 20 years. This is ridiculous. I want to just kind of take, you know, what I do and do it with my own kid. But I had all of these questions and doubts and worries that it wasn't the right way. And I just had, honestly, I didn't know anybody who homeschooled. I didn't know any parents who did it. And growing up, I didn't know any kids who did it. it just really wasn't in my like reality or me and my husband's realm. So we were like, you know. And so I started to listen to podcasts. I started to read books. I started to meet people. You know, as I started to think about it, of course, the universe like puts in your path like all of these people who are doing it. And, you know, and I just really started to realize that it was not a last resort, which is what I initially thought, like, oh, because I can't find a school setting that aligns with what I want, I guess I'm going to have to do this. And not because I didn't want to do it, but because I thought I was kind of cheating my daughter, like she was going to miss out on all of these things, you know? And so it started from like a last resort option to being, oh my gosh, this is the best thing that I could ever do, because it's going to give us all of these benefits that we would not get. Even if the most perfect school was right down the street from my house, we would not get this, you know, all of these things that I started to realize in my mind. So yeah, that's where the path kind of took me and the journey. And, you know, now I'm just really super excited to be homeschooling. I'm so glad that I'm doing it. And my daughter always says, like, why doesn't everyone do this? Because we still don't know that many people. Like in real life, we only know a handful.
And how old did you say she was?
She's six.
She's six. So
this is our first year doing our full-time homeschooling.
Yeah, because you have to report for the first grade level.
Yes, and she was at the farm part-time prior to this, and I was still working full-time. So this is like the first September in the last 3 years that I didn't go back to work full-time. You know, we always had our summers together, and we had our first 3 years together, but then from three, four, and five, I was at work full-time from September to June. So this was our first year where I didn't go back.
So for me, thinking like, and I have a position with government as well. So it's taken a long, long, long time to really grasp like, okay, could I leave this, you know, having the stability of a paycheck and a pension and the health insurance. And obviously you came from teaching, so you feel more equipped than I would to teach a child, but that's coming, you know, I think that just comes with your experience. But how was that process for you? Like how, I mean, for me, it's still very hard to think.
Totally.
Yeah. Okay. I could really break ties and, you know, find ways to live on less money. And
yes, it's still so scary.
And depend on a spouse for their money. Like I know that's a certain way to think of it, and you don't have to because all the money's together. You have your part in the household. They have theirs. But it's still like at the end of the day, like, hey, I'm taking money for this and maybe having to like justify it or what, you know,
it's
I've never
so hard
had to justify my spending to anybody.
100%. So those are some of the biggest struggles that I foresee my family grappling with because it is such a hugely new dynamic. My husband and I have been together almost 20 years. And in the 20 years we were together, I always had this teaching income. I mean, I've been a teacher for 20 years. I was already a teacher when I met him. So I was actually established in my career way before he was. And 10 years ago, he opened a small business. He owns a CrossFit. So this is extremely scary for both of us. And he was definitely not 100% on board when I made the decision to leave my position and go for this full force, because we know that my job is the stable job. Like it's the stable paycheck, it's the retirement, it's the benefits. So this is really, it's a bit scary for my family. Like we are paying for insurance for my daughter, which is affordable, you know, through children's healthcare, but we right now do not have benefits for us. You know, we don't really have much put away in savings. Like this was, you know, we live on Long Island. It's an expensive place to live, you know, and right now it's working out and it's okay. You know, my husband's business is doing well. And I put away some money knowing when I did make this decision, I started to save, you know, so we're okay for now, but it will certainly run out. So I've been trying, you know, I'm working a couple of part-time things, but they're like really small, not bringing in a lot of income. And I'm doing things that are a little bit more flexible and in home and in the evenings, but it's like 2 days a week, you know? So it's a huge adjustment. I mean, for me personally, I kind of went into this with eyes as open as possible because I know like it will still be surprises, I'm sure, and things that I'm not going to be ready for. But with that said, I mean, I did stay home with my daughter for 3 years and I didn't get paid for most of that time that I was home with her. But I knew it was for, I knew it was not permanent. Like, I knew I was going back. So in my mind, it was like, oh, whatever. If I run out my credit cards, like, I'll just pay them back when I go back to work. So right. I made adjustments, but not to this degree, because I knew, like, a paycheck was coming, you know? Yeah. So this is certainly scary. And I definitely have my eggs in a basket of, like, I've got to figure out how to hustle and be a mompreneur and figure out how to make, you know, some of my own income. And also definitely relying on my husband more than ever before. And, you know, he loves me home. You know, it is very just a nicer existence when, you know, mom's not stressed and running around and doing 9,000 things. Like, it's definitely just like a better relationship, a better everything, the schedule, the flexibility. And he has a very flexible schedule because, as I said, he runs a small business. So he can kind of change things and pivot, you know, with not too much hardship. Like, if he wanted to go away for a weekend or do something, it's not that difficult for him. Whereas with the kind of structured job I had, I couldn't do things like that. So he definitely sees the perks, and he knows that I am an expert in my field. So he feels confident in me, like, teaching our daughter. Not that I think you need that at all, but I know for him, that's like a security. And he just knows how much me and my daughter both hated to be away from each other for 3 years. So he sees, like, all that positive. So I think that support definitely helps along the financial piece, but it's going to be a struggle. I have, like I said, with eyes as open as possible, I've made the decision that I'm going to do whatever it takes. I'm leaving that security behind, which is hard, but I'm leaving it behind for something that is so much better to me and so much more worthwhile. And so adjusting our spending, adjusting certain things, like, I'm ready for it all, because there is nothing that replaces this time that I'm getting with my daughter. Like, it just makes me so happy. And there's no material thing that I could buy or have that ever replaces that. I know what it felt like going to work every day and feeling like I was, like, leaving my heart behind. And, you know, I liked what I did. I definitely had some struggles with the system, but I definitely love teaching and I love working with children. But it was like, I wanted to be with my kid.
Yeah, you're spending your time with other people's kids.
Yes. Yes. And I feel like, you know, it's worth it. It's worth it to give up, like, eating out at restaurants and stuff. You have your moments where you're like, oh, I wish I could buy new clothes, or I wish we could do this. But I feel like those things are so short-lived, and this is, like, what life is really, you know, like, this is, like, important to me. Like, this is, like, my life.
Yeah. And for my first child, I went back to work after 6 months. And in my mind, it was just, that's just the way life happened. That is normal. That's what everybody does. In fact, I felt lucky to have had 6 months home with him.
Right.
And now with my daughter, she's like 14 months old, and I haven't left her side other than, you know, run and do a podcast or something for a few hours, and she's with my in-laws. And I oftentimes just look at her during the day and I'm like, I can't believe people are missing these moments with their kids. Just something so small as, we had gone to the dollar store the other day and my son got bubbles and he was blowing the bubbles outside and she was catching them. And that was just beautiful. And then a couple hours later in the house, she had found this little toy, like, wrench thing or something, some toy tool of his, and a little jar. And she was sticking the wrench in and going, and trying to pretend blow bubbles. Like, that's later, so, and I'm like, that is so cute. Like, that she's picking up, that's what he was doing and remembering it and then doing it again herself. And just these little moments that are just so, like, that's what life's about.
Yeah.
You miss all that when you're just part of the matrix and you're like, oh, okay, well, it's 6 a.m. Alarm goes off. Time to go here. Time to shuffle them there. And your whole day operates that way. And it's really crazy.
Your whole mindset and your, like, feelings, your presence, it's all altered. And people would always say, like, oh, but you're a teacher. You have the summer off. You're home by 4 o'clock. And I was like, it's just, I know, first of all, I spend the summer with a pit in my stomach counting down how many days I have left. And yes, I'm home at 4 o'clock, but I'm already thinking about how I have to start dinner and I have to clean up the house from, like, the catastrophe that was left behind all day. And I'm thinking about what needs to be done tomorrow. And it's just like, your mind is not there. Like, it's, your heart and mind are not connected with what you, you know, where you want to be. And I would try so hard to set all of that aside and be like super mom and, oh, we have an hour together before work, so I'm not going to take a shower so that I could paint a picture with my daughter. Like, I was trying to do it all, and it was leaving me feeling really miserable. And I said, you know what, I can't live my life like this. And by the time I'm eligible to retire, I've already put 20 years in, but I had another 13 to go. And it would literally be the year my daughter would be graduating high school. And I was I was like, there's just something wrong with that. Like, the whole way we live as a society, it's like you miss their entire life, basically, and then you're done when they're moving out. Like,
yes.
It just doesn't vibe with me. Like, I was like, this is not how I want to live. So if I'm going to be poor, I'm going to be poor. You know, like, I was like, I can't live like that.
And I've had a couple of podcast episodes with women who are in their 60s that did leave their career. Rosemary Larrabee is the one that's coming to mind most recently. But, you know, she left her career, raised her 4 kids, and now she has a whole new career and is loving what she's doing in her 60s. So she's like, I think she had said, you can have it all as a mom and a woman. You can have it all, just not at the same time.
I love that. That's amazing. I love that. That's perfect. Yeah.
It really,
and that's how I feel. Like, I always say to myself, like, once your family, like, once your kids leave, and then you retire, and it's like, you know, you see a lot of older people, like, you know, even beyond retirement age, but let's say 70s, 80s, a lot of times they're lonely, they're bored. And it's almost like if you had something, a project you were passionate about at that stage in your life, it would be a lifeline. You know what I mean? At this stage in your life, you're scattered a million places. And it's like, you know, it's amazing if you do have a passion project and a career and something you feel strongly about. Like, I have Free Childhood. I feel, not that it's necessarily a business, but it's like a platform that I speak from. And I feel really passionate about it, and I want to share that. But the number one passion in my life right now is being a mom to my daughter, you know, and everything else is like far below that. So I just, you know, and what you were saying before about missing those moments, a big thing for me was because I was home with my daughter for 3 years, I knew that the best, like, her best self happens the hours I'm at work. It's like those morning hours, you can't replace that. So when I would get home, even though, oh, you get home at 4 o'clock. Yeah, I get home at 4 o'clock and she's like done for the day. Like, that's the time of day where she just kind of wants to like sit, zone out, watch TV, like do something super relaxed. You know, maybe if it was a gorgeous spring day and we got sun for the first time, she'd be a little, get a second wind. But for the most part, she didn't want to talk at that time of day. She didn't really want to connect. She didn't want to tell me about her day. And I think most parents can relate to this. Like, those evening hours, your kids are just hungry, tired, kind of done. But the morning was, like, so special. Like, I would get to, like, we would play and connect and, like, have all of this, like, magical conversation and things that I would get to see and experience with her. And so I knew I was missing that. And I think a lot of moms don't really realize that because they go back to work when their babies are still infants.
Yeah.
And they just go to work and that's just their life, you know, and they just adapt to it. But when you've seen it and you've had it, it's really hard to give it up. Like, it's so hard because you know what you're missing, you know. And I don't blame anybody for their choices. I think it's just the way our society is set up right now. And
yes.
I have a big 100%.
It's taken a lot to pull myself out of, you know, what we kind of call the matrix, the way they want us to think life should be. Now, how was the transition for your daughter going from like that farm school to like, okay, now we're actually homeschooling. She's first grade level. You have the teaching background. So I know there's a million ways to homeschool, and I'm sure you're learning about them all too, delving into this, but you are for 20 years have been doing the public school setting. So that's just naturally going to be what you do and what we all do with our kids, right? Like, here's your desk and here's all your stuff and here's our curriculum.
You would think that.
So tell us, how is that going? What was your mindset around what you formulated for your homeschool and what does it look like?
Okay. So, I would say that when I was researching like private school options, I learned a lot about Waldorf and Montessori because those are two very like, popular private school options, which are also homeschooling methods, right? So I spent like, you know, probably a year and a half to 2 years, like reading a lot of Montessori and Waldorf literature. I visited some schools and I loved things about both of them. I was like, wow, this is amazing. That's amazing. And then, of course, once I landed on homeschool, it brought me down the path of learning about unschooling and Charlotte Mason and classical education. So I started to kind of like learn about each of these approaches. And every time I would be learning about something and reading things, I'd be like, wow, I love that, or I love this. So I was really doing this research because in my mind at first it was, I want to look for like a private school that's going to align. And then I started to do the research because I was like, okay, well, let's, you know, I would just be listening and thinking about homeschool as just a concept. And of course, people would throw names out like Charlotte Mason. I'd be like, who's that? You know, so yeah. Or John Holt, who's that? So I started to just, you know, as an educator, I like to read, I like to learn. So I started to kind of do that. I would say that the advantage being a school teacher for 20 years gives me, and this is just my personal feeling, is it gives me confidence to know that I did not need to pick an approach and I did not need to say like, oh, I'm going to be this and I'm going to follow this. There was no, I never went into it with a concern of like, what curriculum am I going to use and what's our routine going to look like? What's our rhythm? What's our schedule? I was home with my daughter for 3 years. I'm home with her all summer, you know, vacations and things like that. So we have a natural rhythm and routine that we've always had that I always just feel like is just best practices for childhood and for like helping your kids like grow in, you know, a natural way and be healthy.
Hi, everyone. Thank you again for listening to this week's episode. I wanted to reach out and give you a discount code for the Tuttle Twins. The Tuttle Twins help children develop critical thinking skills about real-world concepts, sharing ideas with kids that most adults don't even know. Let's be honest. The Tuttle Twins books recognize that the world is full of companies, people, and politicians who want to expose your children to ideas that you do not support. I read them with my kids. My 5-year-old at least can understand. The 1-year-old, she's almost there. But they provoke some really great conversations, things that I wouldn't necessarily think to talk to him about. And they present these concepts in a way that kids can actually understand, and it makes sense. So please check out thehomeschoolhowto.com, and under listener discounts, you can find the Tuttle Twins and use code Cheryl40 for 40% off all products for kids ages 5 through 11. That's Cheryl40. Now, you do have to use my link and code to get the discount and so that they know I sent you, which would be greatly appreciated. Thank you so much and enjoy the rest of your listening.
So I knew those things were just going to continue to carry over. So I kind of had that background knowledge of these things I had learned about. But I basically took probably very little from what I've done in public school for 20 years. It's almost like I chose to homeschool because I want the complete opposite of that. Okay. So I would say if I had to put myself in a box, I'm probably most like an unschooler. Okay. So not what you would imagine. Like, no, we do not have a school room. We do not have a desk. We do not have any of that. You know, most of our days are spent going places and being outside. Like we're at, you know, we actually go to where she went to farm preschool is a public place. It's free. You can go there. So we go there at least twice a week. We still see her old teachers and the people who work at the farm. And it's just like a beautiful place. And we go there and just, you know, hang out, sometimes meet up with other homeschoolers. I usually throw it out there and try to meet people that way. Mm-hmm. But we do a lot of hiking, a lot of parks, a lot of nature, but museums too. You know, we're about an hour from the city, an hour from Montauk. So we're always like out and about. We go to see plays, you know, we're like doing stuff a lot. The days that we're home, you know, our like our natural rhythm, we have, you know, certain things that I think are really important, but they're not like traditional what you would think. I do not have a curriculum. I did not order a curriculum. I don't own any curriculum. I don't have any of that. Mm-hmm. However, I certainly did take pieces as I was learning about Waldorf and Charlotte Mason. I took pieces from them that I love, that I've incorporated. They don't typically happen every day in our house, but like there's, you know, things that I kind of try to cycle in and I have in my mind like, oh, let's try to do a handcraft sometime, you know, in the next week or so. I also have a girl who comes to my house one day a week that I homeschool. Like her parents are homeschooling, but they're working. So when she comes to my house, I'm a little bit more structured and we do like I have like, okay, we do some letter work and we do some numbers and math because I think that's what the parents are paying me for. Like they're paying for my expertise as a teacher and they want me to work with their child. And I have to tell you, my daughter loves it. like when that girl goes home, my daughter's always like, oh, we should do this again tomorrow. Like she actually really likes it, which is so funny to me. Like I'm like, yeah. She'd probably love public school. I mean, she likes to sit and like do the letters and, you know. So I do, you know, I do it on Thursdays. It's like in this calendar that we do that. And then sometimes during the week, like today she's sick, so we're home and we're not doing anything. And she wanted to like pretend and play. And as we were doing that, it was like, okay, let's write some letters, you know. So we, you know, it gets woven in here and there, but I'm a strong believer in, because I've seen it with her. And again, every kid and every household is different, so I can't speak for everyone. But for her, I've seen just she's naturally learned so much, and she's just everything's like on her timetable, and she just seems to absorb like through osmosis so much. And I really do believe that that's the case for most children. Like if you're a healthy, you know, child and you're growing up in like a rich environment, I think that they really do just kind of – they are sponges. Like they do just learn. So I don't put a strong focus or concern on like we need to sit down and do these scheduled subject areas.
Yeah, and I think that's important for parents to hear. I mean, myself, I don't have the teaching background. And just for an example, yesterday, you know, I sat with my son to do his curriculums that I've, you know, pieced together. And one is like, the, I think they word it on the top, review these numbers with your child. So, it was like 23, 35. And I don't know that we've ever, even though it said review, I don't know that we've ever sat down and pointed at a two-digit number and had him say it without starting like from one on the chart, you know, looking at them.
Right, right.
So that was hard for him. And I'm like going nuts. I'm like, Colin, you know this. If it, all right, what's after the 20s? What would be that group next? And he's like,
yeah,
I don't know. And, but I'm like, wait, but you can count to 80. I don't understand. Yeah. And it's, you know, I'm not connecting that. Pointing to a two-digit number, a double-digit number doesn't, he's not making the connection of where that is on the chart, right? Or yeah. Starting from one. So, you know, I'm getting frustrated, probably making him feel dumb. And then, like, so we got through it, all right? And then, like, later in the day, he said something to me, like, he remembered an instance that happened a year ago. He was like, Mom, remember that time you rolled over, you know, the skunk in the road? Or it wasn't even that, but it was something like, I was like, how would you remember that? But you can't remember 33. Like, and like he said 33, and 2 minutes later, I was like, no, what is that number? He's like, I don't know. So, but yeah. What I'm bringing up is that you're so right. When they're ready, they will absorb it like a sponge. And just because he didn't remember that that was a 33 2 minutes later doesn't mean he's not absorbing some portion of that. Yeah. It just means that when it's relevant to him, he will remember that because,
yes,
you know,
relevant
because,
to me.
Yeah, maybe when he is putting together, you know, a Power Wheels car or something, he's going to need to know how to count to 33 or whatever. And like, I don't know, something will make that connection for him. I think we have to think about, we're just exposing them to things. They don't need to know, especially at this age, they don't need to have things memorized or learned yet. We're simply just exposing. So like we don't have to, I guess even thinking of ourselves as teachers, it's so wrong. We're just exposures. I don't know. But you know, and it's hard when you're not a teacher and you don't have that background, because we feel us parents that are choosing to homeschool feel inadequate a lot, you know, or judged by family members that also have no experience with homeschoolers. And why isn't your kid reading when, you know, my other grandkids could read at six and your kid's eight and you're not even, you know, whatever. So I think that we beat ourselves up, and we have to be more confident in our children, their ability to absorb it through osmosis when it's appropriate.
Yes. And there's so much that you just said that like I could unpack a million things there, but I'll say one thing is, you know, when you're feeling that hot under the collar, because I get that, like I have felt that a million times with my own child or in the classroom with other kids. It's like sometimes it's like it feels stressful. You feel like this anxiety of like, oh my God, why isn't this working, right? And when you feel like that, they totally can feel that, right? Yeah. They sense that 100%. So the thing is, that's like when you have to like abandon ship at that moment. Like you, there's no dire need. And here's what is the beauty, one of the beauties, because there's about a million to homeschooling. As a teacher in a classroom, I didn't really have that ability. I mean, yes, you could do it to a degree. But like, let's say I have 25 kids in my room and three of them I'm working with right now are completely struggling with this particular math concept. It's like, you know, I didn't really have, maybe occasionally you could, but for the most part, I can't just be like, okay, this isn't working. Let's just stop math. Like, let's just move on. It was like, you know, you have 20 other kids are working on this. And so you're really like struggling and pushing and trying to get these kids to kind of like meet where everybody else is. And that was a struggle that as a teacher I experienced on a daily basis, whether it was math, reading, but it was always trying to make all of the kids ready for a particular thing when, of course, you're not going to have 20 plus kids all on the same page. That's just an impossibility. But you felt like you needed to constantly push, push, push and like, okay, how do we figure this out? So the biggest word probably in elementary education is remediation. It's like you're always remediating. You're always trying to, you know, we have to provide levels of support. We have to provide intervention. These are like big common phrases. And it's a shame because really what you're saying is that we always have to get everybody to the same spot on, you know, every day of the year. And that's just an impossibility. But in our homes, we don't have to do that. Like, we're only putting that pressure on ourselves. So yeah. That moment when it's not working, that's the moment where you go, this isn't working. Like, let's put this away. Like, we're going to move on to something different. Like, let's do something that makes us both feel good right now. You know, like, okay. Let's go run around outside or let's read a story together or let's build with Legos. But whatever it is, it's like, we don't need to make ourselves feel like this. That doesn't mean, you know, like, I have to be careful because I don't want my daughter, I don't want to put out the perception to anyone or to my daughter that we don't do things because they're hard or like, oh, as soon as something's hard, like, nope, like we're only going to do things when they feel easy. I don't want to put that out there. However, it's like, you know, like right now my daughter's learning how to ride a two-wheeler and that's hard, but you're having small successes and you're feeling good about it. And it's like a journey that you're on and it's like, yes. And, but why don't we take that same thing to our academics, right? It's like almost like, we think book work is supposed to feel hard and stressful and like we have to get – we call it work, right? We have to get through this work so that we can play. But that's not true. Like gymnastics is hard, but you love it. You consider it play and you're like trying to get better at these skills. I want to take that same mentality to everything we do. Like this is something that we're enjoying and we're on a journey and it's a little hard and we make mistakes and mistakes are good because we're learning. But the moment it doesn't feel like a good kind of work, like if you were riding your two-wheeler and you fell and you scraped your knee and you were bleeding and you felt horrible, you would most likely be like, all right, that's a wrap today. Like we're going to try this again another day, right? Mm-hmm. It's the same with math. Like the moment it feels like it's hurting, like it's like, oh my God, this is stressful. We're having anxiety. It's agonizing. Like put it away, you know? So I kind of feel like that's the beauty that I don't ever have to do that with my daughter. And I remember meeting a mom probably a year before I decided to homeschool. I just randomly met this woman at the library and she was telling me that she homeschooled her daughter. And I said to her like, oh, and she was very much aligned with Montessori. So she was like, I'm a Montessori homeschooler. And I said, oh, you know, I just went and visited a Montessori school. I wish there was more of them. You know, it's so far from my house. And she was like, well, why don't you homeschool? And I said, I don't want to stop being mommy and start being teacher. I don't want, like me and my daughter have such a beautiful relationship and it doesn't look anything like the relationship I have with my students. Like me and my daughter, it's very special. Like it's mommy and baby, mommy, daughter. And at school, I'm a teacher. And that sometimes means that I'm like a little strict, a little firm, like, you know, just not the same feeling. Like I don't want that with my daughter. And the lady looked at me kind of puzzled and she was like, but you've been teaching your daughter since the day she was born. Like you've always been her teacher. And I was like, yeah, I guess that's true. And that always stuck with me because she didn't change my mind in that moment, but I was kind of on this journey. And now I find myself saying that to moms all the time who, you know, might be homeschooling and saying like, oh, it's so hard being my child's teacher, or I don't think I could ever homeschool, you know, but that comes up a lot where I'm like, but you've always been their teacher. You taught them how to walk. You taught them how to talk. You taught them how to do everything they were doing, you know? So being their teacher doesn't have to take on that connotation of like, we've got to do this and we're getting through this workbook page. It doesn't have to be that at all. It's just a natural evolution of like when they cook with you in the kitchen or when, you know, you were riding bikes or whatever it is. It's like it could be the exact same thing. And it doesn't have to happen through textbooks and workbooks, you know.
No, it's so true. And I think that homeschooling parents have to think about when you're in a school building, you've got 25 kids in the classroom and some of them are going to be paying attention and some of them are going to be, most of them are going to be off in La La Land. But eventually kids do pick things up. I mean, you meet people all the time that, you know, drive vehicles. They all picked that up at some point. Like, so it might seem at the time that our kid isn't getting it, but we're giving them one-on-one attention when we're homeschooling. They're mm-hmm. getting so much more information than if they were in the classroom because there's just distractions everywhere there. So, totally. You know, I have to, when he doesn't realize that that's still the number 33, you know, I do have to remember in that moment that that is fine. Because if he were in a classroom right now, he might have not even looked at the two threes next to each other and, you know, put that in his little bucket of, okay, this is something I've seen now. And maybe later it's something I'll remember. And, you know, so there's just so much more that they are picking up that we're not even aware of, you know, when they're home with us.
Yeah. And we also get to play up their strengths. Like we get to see what does like ignite our kids and get them like, you know, sometimes you'll just see something that you're like, wow, my kid's so good at this. Like that's like their thing. That's their talent or their like innate skill. And they get to do a whole lot of that at homeschool. And at regular school, they probably didn't get to do, they wouldn't have gotten to do that at all. Like my daughter's thing is pretending and she's like an amazing actress. Like I'm always like, where did you get that from? Like she comes up with these personalities and stories. And I mean, you could call her like maybe she has multiple personalities.
But Sybil.
Like, yeah, she's like, she's so good at it. Like she'll even put on accents and stuff. And she's been doing it since she was like 3. Now she doesn't go to acting school or anything like that because she's shy and she doesn't really want to. But just the fact that she gets to really dive into that at home and do copious amounts of it, I know that it is like feeding a part of who she is. You know, and that I don't know what it's going to turn into. Like I, you know, I'm not saying she's going to be in the movies one day. I don't know what it will turn into. Maybe it will help her be a creative writer. Maybe it will be a way that she can kind of connect and speak to people and share like experiences in a certain way. I don't know what it will amount to, but I know that this is such a big piece of her. It's going to go somewhere. And I also know that if she was in public school, she would not be doing it anymore because she would be at school for 7 hours a day where she would really get no opportunities to explore that creative side of herself, like pretending and making her animals talk and making herself dress up and put on costumes and do all of these kind of role plays. And what would happen is it would diminish further and further where maybe she would do it at home a little bit, you know, but maybe she'd get home and be too tired or maybe she would have gymnastics or swim or and it would start to maybe become only on Saturday mornings and then eventually it would just go away. But yeah. Because she does it for like 2 to 3 hours every single day, it's still a really strong part of her. And I just think that for most of us who went through public school, you can't really remember who you were as a kid. Like you don't really know like what was I good at? What did I love? Like what was my natural little self like? You don't really know because you went to school and you forgot. And that was one of the hugest driving forces for me. Like, I never wanted her to forget and just become like everybody else who just sits and does reading and math all day.
Oh, that is such a good point. And I just interviewed a girl who's 14 and is homeschooled and published her first book and like a novel. And she's 14. Like, I remember writing when I was a kid, but exactly like you said, and I never thought of it in those terms, it was squashed. And I remember to this day being in like a high school class and we were in the library and the teacher's like, okay, highlight the main idea. Well, I highlighted something and she says, no, that's wrong. And it's like, well, I don't know, maybe I got a different idea from it than you did. How do you know?
Right?
But, you know, just things like that. Like, so saying to me, no, that's wrong. I was like, well, maybe I don't understand things I'm reading. So if I don't understand things I'm reading, maybe I'm not good enough to be a writer, you know? And that's so true. And I'm just thinking of things that my son does. I mean, he goes outside just in the woods and is going in the mud all day long and just loves it.
I love that. And yeah.
Can you imagine? I couldn't imagine like putting him, I think it a lot now, like, oh wow, he is supposed to be down the street in a building right now, sitting in a chair. Like I can't, he can't. We went on a hike yesterday and he was just running. He couldn't, it was a storybook hike. You like stop at the pages they have all throughout the trail and he would just run to the next one. And it was like to even get him to read the page to stay, he couldn't, he was just off and running and jumping and leaping. And it was fun. I can't picture him in a classroom. He hated it when he went to preschool last year for just 3 hours, you know, three times a week.
It's unnatural. And the biggest thing, I'm sorry, I'm cutting you off, but the biggest thing teachers deal with a lot is like behavior problems, but it's because it's an unnatural situation. And as a teacher, it was so frustrating trying to come up with like the magic bullet, like what's the cure? How do we deal with, you know, constant behavior things and, you know, disruptions and, you know, kids who are having a meltdown or, and you're trying to find this special cure for it. And it's teachers everywhere. It's across the board. Obviously, some years are better than others and some teachers might have certain things that work better than others. But for the most part, it's always trying to figure out a system to cure the fact that this is a completely unnatural environment that we are putting on these kids. And of course, you're going to have a lot of kids who adapt to it because as humans, we're built for adaptation. So many kids are just going to adapt to it as you would adapt to jail or a job that you hate or anything else. It's like, and some kids like it. Don't get me wrong. Lots of kids love going to school. However, would they love homeschooling more? I bet you they would. You know what I mean? They just don't know any different. Like they don't, they love it because that's the kind of kid they are. Like they're a very agreeable kid who likes to be in a group and maybe, you know, likes to get attention from an adult who's giving them positive reinforcement. But at the end of the day, would they like it a whole lot more if they were outside all day with that adult and having a good time? You know, I mean, I just, it, no matter how you slice it, it's an unnatural thing to ask kids to do.
Yeah. And they might like certain aspects of it. It doesn't mean that they like the situation of sitting in a desk and learning with, you know, 25 other people the same way. They might like the, you know, right now as we're recording this, it's October. So they might like, you know, talking about a Halloween parade and they might like, you know, at Christmas time when they do their concert or, you know, they might like when you're in high school, the prom or the football games. But a lot of those things, I mean, they dangle carrots at us from every which way, right?
Totally.
Facebook
totally.
Or Siri, you know, they've got these great qualities to them, but are they also detrimental? Well, yeah, the government's listening to everything you're doing, but you know what? Say you need milk and we're going to have your grocery list for you. It's easy as that. You know what I mean? So it's like these football games and proms are just little carrots to dangle because if you just had the raw sit in a desk and learn all day, you know, from the board, nobody would do it or nobody would want to. So they do have to do little things along the way. And, you know, or pajama day or wear your clothes backwards day. But it doesn't mean that you can't do that stuff at home. If that's stuff that made you happy, do that with your kid. You know, everybody wears their clothes backwards one day. You know,
that's really cute. I like that. I think I'm going to do that.
I don't even had that in school. I'm just throwing out something.
Yeah. No, I totally know what you mean. Spirit week.
Yeah.
Spirit week. We would have all the crazy, crazy hair day, wear your hat day. Yeah.
So what are, I mean, are there other things that you saw in the school system that you also were like, yeah, I'm not, this isn't a part, not that we're trying to like dig up the dirt, right? But I mean, there's obviously a lot of funding, of what's going on right now is, you know, the gender ideology stuff. And did you see a lot of that down in Long Island?
Definitely not. No.
Oh, good.
But the things that were really like big factors for me is, you know, I think over time, like they just have taken, you know, that we have this strong academic pressure that, you know, our country needs to catch up. And in light of that, they're just marginalizing everything else out. So recess is 20 minutes at the most. You know, anytime there is an opportunity to cancel recess, it is canceled. Like if there's a puddle outside, we're canceling recess. If there is, you know, mist, recess is canceled. If it's 31 degrees, recess is canceled. So, you know, the lack of play is huge for me. And I think that the strong academic focus is getting younger and younger. Now here in New York City, they have universal 3K. So it's pre-K for 3-year-olds. And, you know, most people look at those things as progress because they're like, oh, great. You know, there's free childcare for parents to go to work. And I get it. I get how that seems like a positive thing. But now you're talking about putting three-year-olds in a oftentimes full-day program, because even when these things are offered as half-day, they're actually 5 hours. And they usually come with the opportunity to drop your kid off early or keep them there late, like before care and after care, which many parents capitalize on because of their work schedule.
Right.
So, I mean, I know many kids who at three are going to programs from, you know, 8 to 12 hours a day. And those programs are becoming more and more structured and academically focused. I mean, for teachers to think about having 20 kids in your class running amok and just playing free all day long, for many people, that's like, well, we can't have that. It won't be safe, or it'll be completely disruptive. It'll be crazy. So it's like, okay, well, what are some things we can have them do in a structured environment? We could have them sit down and practice letters and trace lines. And so they're always going to have a strong push for academics, because it's just in a huge building filled with people. You're not going to promote hundreds of kids running through the halls or being super loud. Like I always said, you would think a building filled with children would be a place that you walk in and it's like filled with laughter and kids kind of dancing and running through and skipping. But what you see is people standing in straight lines, sometimes with their fingers over their lips or their hands by their side. You hear a lot of teachers who have little rhymes or things to explain to the kids how they're supposed to stand and walk. And at the end of the day, what everyone is pushing for is for everyone to be compliant and for everyone to kind of just get in line and be quiet and do as you're told. And it's like, it's a factory worker model that started, you know, during the Industrial Revolution, and it has not changed. And yet every website, if you look at school websites or their mission statements, whatever they send home in September to talk about, you know, what their philosophy of education is and their mission statement and all of those buzzwords, it will always have the words creativity. You know, we're trying to promote creativity, individuality, uniqueness, leadership. It always has those words, but it's just not true. I mean, if you wanted kids to act like leaders, you would not be squashing their ideas when they're acting like a leader. You know, what you really want is for everyone to sit down, be quiet, fold their legs together, or sit up straight and act like everybody else. That's not leadership. That's not creativity. That's not ingenuity. And yet, anybody you speak to, if you say, you know, what do kids really need when they grow up? What are they going to need in this world? Yes, they need to be creative. You know, they need to have these certain skill sets that can be self-starters and motivated and all of this. But school is really not promoting any of that. So those, in a nutshell, are some of my greatest issues. And I just, you know, I feel that my child learns better, and all children do, through authentic experiences. And I don't think that sitting down to, you know, copious amounts of workbook pages and textbooks is the best way to learn. I mean, of course you will learn. I think kids will learn, you know, in a padded room. I mean, I think kids are built to learn. So I think they will learn, really, no matter the circumstances. But why not give them the best option, which is to actually learn through living, like to get out and experience things. And like the amount of things that your son learns playing in the forest and in the mud, you know, there's so much learning that's happening. And if we allow them to grow that way, like those things will transfer into skills that they can use in their life. It absolutely will. It's not, there's just not just one way. Like it's not just you have to learn these facts and then you're going to receive this diploma and have this successful career path. Like everyone knows that's not the real world anymore, but yet schools are still operating like that. And that was really, you know, some of my biggest issues.
And I was just talking to my husband last night about, you know, what are our goals for our kids homeschooling? We should talk about, you know, even at their young ages, what are our goals? What's the plan? And, you know, I said, I want them to be able to have jobs that they enjoy, like things that they actually, so obviously I can't know what that is, but it's my job again to expose them to all different things and all different fields. And then if there's a field that they kind of gravitate to, okay, well, let's delve further and find out more about that field. And that's on top of, you know, I want them to know things like how to, you know, take care of animals on a farm, you know, or hunt or use, you know, weaponry or, and, you know, grow food, preserve food, all the things I didn't know. I don't know.
Yeah.
I still don't.
Yeah.
I want to learn it with them because, you know, different things, because survival skills themselves are just gone. And I mean, we just don't know what, maybe they won't ever need them, but how do we know their kids and their kids won't? We don't know what this world is going to look like. I mean, right now is just a terrifying place anyways, with wars breaking out here and there. It's like, okay, well, you can't go wrong knowing that stuff. Like, no one's ever like, I wish I didn't know how to grow this food. I mean, find water, you know? So, you know, we were just talking about how, and I've always felt this way, that school never showed me all the options. It was teacher, doctor, lawyer, healthcare.
Right.
What one do you want to be? I don't know. I'll just get my four-year degree and get into government work and sit and be told what to do. Sit down, shut up, fall in line. And I think it never rang more true for me than when I, like, said at work, I'm like, they're having this issue with an audit. And I'm like, here is how we can fix it. No, we don't want to hear how we can fix it. We don't want it fixed. If it's fixed, they'll just find a new problem. If it's the same issue every year, they won't look any further. So it was like, I was like, I just can't live this way. Like, my life has no purpose. I'm taking my time away from my kids to sit here and do semantics with you so that things look good on the books. I can't.
Right. Yeah. So frustrating. Totally get that.
Yeah, I'm sure you saw some of that stuff with the school system too.
Well, when you feel like you don't have a purpose and you're being taken away from your family for something that you don't feel is a strong purpose, that's a huge, you know, it's like, you know, you're just, it makes you so miserable.
Right.
Yeah.
Whereas my husband likes what he does. He does commercial HVAC. So he's like, okay, well, I was on a roof today. It was really hot or it was freezing cold, but I fixed the chiller and now the operating room can work at the local hospital. So, like, he feels like he did something. I'm like, oh yeah, no, I've never had that feeling with government work. Never. But you do as a parent, as a mom. And how do you think your daughter, you said she's happier being homeschooled. How are you going to approach the things like, you know, maybe missing out on like the dances or whatever. And I'm sure there's other things in school. It's been so long since I've been there. And I guess maybe that's my own answer, is we don't even remember them ourselves. But but there's a lot of people that before they dive into homeschooling, that they're like, oh, I don't want to take away the pep rallies and, you know, the fun little things, school, you know, field day. They feel guilty taking that away from their daughter. How do you kind of go through that, those things in your mind and look at the future for your family?
Yeah, I'm so worried about that. Honestly, I am, because I feel like it's even all over like TV and pop culture. So even at this age, like, she already is aware that like schools have dances and schools have these like, you know, somewhat special events, because, you know, A, she hears friends in the neighborhood who go to school sometimes share like, oh, we're wearing our pajamas to school today. Mm-hmm. And she's seen on TV like that kids are getting ready for a dance or whatever. So it's been very minimal at this point, but I know it's only going to grow.
Right.
And I'm honestly so worried, because here's the thing, like, we know as adults how insignificant those things were. And it's like, okay, like, you know, you're going to sit in high school for 4 years miserable so that you could go to the one prom and that all girls end up leaving crying that night anyway. Like, it's never even it's never even a successful event. It's like you all end up crying, you know. It's like, you know, and things like, let's say, homecoming parade or something. It's like the only people who are enjoying that are the people on the float who have the crowns on, right? Like, it's like, it's like the vast majority of kids are not really actually, like, in your mind as a homeschooler, though, if you're not getting those experiences, you know, well, I could have been the girl who has the crown on, and maybe that would be me. And of course, we know as their parents that most likely it wouldn't be. Most likely you would be part of the majority who is not really enjoying this. Those ideas always sound better, like, in theory, and then in real life, they're just not that great. So I think the vast majority of people didn't have, like, a super awesome experience in high school, and we don't look back on those events as being, like, you know, really special days in our history. There are some. There's a small minority of people, the really popular ones who really did, you know, maybe have the best time ever. But I would say the majority of people, that's not our reality. But the thing is, you can never tell someone. Like, I can't tell my daughter that, and that's going to be enough. Like, people have to, she'll have to live through it herself.
Hey, folks, me again real quick. I just wanted to let you know that I do have a t-shirt and sweatshirt for sale now on my website. Be the Role Model Your Government Fears, the Homeschool How-To Podcast. If you'd like to get yours, you can head on over to my website, thehomeschoolhowto.com. And under shop, you can find t-shirts, hoodies, and that's about it so far. I would love your support. Have a great day.
So my plan, I guess, is first of all, I'm taking this 1 year at a time. And if my daughter ever was really like, I really want to go to school, like I want to experience these things, I wouldn't hold her back from it. I mean, I would allow her to try it. I don't think that I would be benefiting her, because even though I know, like, but this is the best thing for her, if I don't allow her to like try something that she really wants to try, she's always going to resent it. And then it's never going to feel like it was the best thing, because it's going to be this bad thing in her mind. So. Right. My plan is that if she's really pushing for, like, I want – of course, I'm always going to have honest conversations with her. Like, let's say in, you know, third grade, she's been seeing the kids in our neighborhood go to school in pajama day every year. And she's like, you know, I really want to try school. Like, they get to go to pajama day. It's so cool. Like, I never get to do that. They have the daddy-daughter dance. I never get to do that. I'm going to have some real talks with her, which we already have to an extent, just about like what school's like and what the day is like. But I'm going to have talks with her about like, well, just remember, like you're going to have to sit in school, you know, Monday through Friday every day from the time like after breakfast till almost dinner time. Like you have to sit in school and only get to go outside for 20 minutes. And, you know, this is what the day is like every day, just so you could go to that one dance, like that one night at Valentine's Day. And, you know, yes, you'll get to wear your pajamas like maybe 1 or 2 days out of the whole year, but you're going to have 180 days of school. Like, do you really? So I'm going to have some real conversations with her. Like, do you really want that? But if she's like, yes, I really want that, then at some point I would enroll her in school, and I would just hope, fingers crossed, that she would go and she would try it and she would get it out of her system and be like, okay, yeah, this really wasn't worth it, you know?
Yeah.
But I'm terrified of it. I am. And I always say, like, it's like I feel like, because just in normal life, everybody goes to school. So at some point, if your kid never goes to school, they're just naturally going to want to know what this school is. It's like this elusive school. Like every single day when we're out in the world, somebody asks her, like, what grade are you in? Are you in kindergarten or first grade? Like, where do you go to school? Like, these conversations happen every single day. And she only just turned 6. So I can see this road is going to get harder and harder in that way. And hopefully you get lucky and you have a kid that's just like, oh my God, I love this and I wouldn't change it for the world. And I see the kids in my neighborhood who go to school and they don't really like it. So I'm good. Like, I don't want to try it. This is great. Hopefully I get lucky and that's how it is. But I do, you know, suspect that it might go the other way at some point, because I just think that's the society we live in.
It's a curiosity, you know? Too. And it's funny that you bring it up about like what's on the TV and internet, because a woman that I had interviewed on this podcast, she just sent me the other day. She said, look at my daughter was watching this on YouTube, and it's called Mom Read My Diary. And it's about the mom read the diary and was jealous of her daughter having a boyfriend or something. And pulled the daughter out of school to homeschool her and was like making her life miserable at homeschool. So there are actual things out there that are putting a bad light on homeschool that our kids, you know, we definitely need to be aware that that's out there. And it's because that's for a reason. I don't think the government wants a lot of people homeschooling. So there are things like this out there that we do just have to be aware of.
Yeah.
And I had one more question for you, because something that comes up in my mind too when I think about safety, like I just personally struggle with even my 5-year-old safely getting like on the bus, off where he needs to the classroom, you know, all the things going on during the day, whether it's bullying, whether he's the bully and is somebody correcting his behavior or is somebody bullying him, or even like when you get to them doing like drills for school shootings. Like, what is that doing to him, his psyche? We didn't have that when I was in school. It was, you know, fire drills, which isn't as, you know, terrifying. But now when you're like, I don't know what they're telling the kids. Does that lay on your shoulders at all when you think about her being at home? Or do you feel that, you know, you were in the school system, they know what they're doing?
I mean, that was not a strong concern for me. It wasn't really a factor. I mean, I'm certainly, it's a perk that at home she doesn't have to, you know, have those conversations. But I mean, to be honest, you know, teaching in school for 20 years, as far as just to go through your list, like getting on and off the bus or getting to your classroom, I think that kids are much more self-sufficient than we give them credit for. Mm. I think it's really important that we teach our kids skills like being able to, like, I want my daughter to be able to walk to her friend's house down the street in the next, you know, I don't know exactly when, I can't put a timeline on it, but I think that it's important for kids to learn, like, you know, how to navigate, like, and, you know, go to a neighbor's house or do, you know, so I think, you know, the kids learn as soon as kindergarten starts, they're very self-sufficient with, and, you know, and there's obviously safety measures in place. Like, as a teacher, I worked in a kindergarten to third grade building, and every teacher walked, every school has their own policy and how they do things, but we walked our kids to their buses. So, you know, there was definitely some parameters for making sure that kids are getting on the correct bus, that they're getting to the place they need to be. But the kids can, you know, they learn that very quickly. And the kids who are struggling with it, you know, I think that there's a lot of adults working there and they've had a lot of practice and they are familiar with, like, okay, this kid might need an escort or someone to be really on top of this. And the worst case scenario, if a kid gets on the wrong bus, like the bus company, principal or bus company calls one or the other very quickly and they're brought back to school and their parents are notified. So I think things like that are kind of like anomalies that, you know, they may happen, they may occur with one kid one time of the whole school year. And it's not really like something that's a normal occurrence that you as a parent really have to like lay awake thinking about. Like, for me, danger zones are like, what are normal occurrences? Normal occurrences are us looking at our cell phones while we're driving our kids in the backseat. Like, we've all done it, and it's happening all over the roads. Like, every single time I'm at a red light now, the car in front of me never goes when it turns green because everyone's got their head in their phone. So, you know, the things that are actual dangers, because car accidents are happening, like, at record numbers because people are looking at their phones instead of paying attention to the road, are, you know, that the percentage of that happening over the percentage of, like, you know, a kid, you know, getting kidnapped off of the schoolyard, that it's just vastly different. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's like, this is like a real concern versus this is like something that never, ever, ever happens. And of course, as parents, we worry about our kids' safety. And if they go anywhere for 40 hours a week or 35 hours a week, we worry about them. But those kind of things that, like, happen, you know, to one person one time, like, in 10 years, aren't things that really, like, should drive decision-making, you know? Okay. As far as bullying, yeah, I mean, that's, you know, you put a group of kids together and it's a reality that sometimes there's going to be a kid in the group who's kind of, like, just not as socialized as the others and doesn't know how to get along great with other kids and therefore might, you know, have emotional bursts, outbursts, meltdowns, maybe target kids or say things that are rude or just things that little kids have to navigate a lot in dealing with groups. It certainly happens. And as a parent, I think I just know, like, if my kid was in that position, I would raise hell to, like, figure it out. Like, I would not, like, I feel like I would just always be like, I would be the overbearing parent that's at the school and like, what are we doing about this? I would not let it slide. But obviously you only, you know, you have only so much control. But I feel like if my kid had a bad teacher, if my kid had a bad kid in their class, like, I would literally, like, burn bridges to make sure that, like, things were done, you know? But unfortunately, like, yeah, a lot of parents don't do that. They don't feel comfortable doing that or they don't really know what's going on. And as a professional who works in the building, it is so hard to navigate all of that stuff. Like, there is layers of reasons as to why this child is acting like this. There's nothing I can do that's going to fix it. Like, I shouldn't say nothing, but it's going to take years. Like, it's not something that I'm going to be able to fix in my one school year with this child or overnight. Like, we might make progress, but we're not going to, like, there's probably thousands of reasons why this child is who they are, right? Mm-hmm. So it is really difficult. Like, people will say, like, oh, schools don't do anything about this. It's not that they necessarily don't want to do anything. It's that they just, what are they going to do? This usually stems from, like, issues that are happening in that child's home, issues that are happening in their, like, health, nutrition, how they've grown up from infancy. There is no Band-Aid. You know what I'm saying? So you can punish these kids. You can, you know, you can what's the word I'm looking for right now? Suspend them or whatever. But it's like, at the end of the day, none of that's going to fix it. You know, it's just a bigger, bigger issue. So I do empathize with schools and administrators trying to deal with that. Certainly ignoring it is not the method. And I think parents need to be made more aware when something is happening that involves their children. And I think sometimes schools drop the ball there because they don't want to deal with that confrontation. And that, again, is a society issue because it's how families and schools right now are interacting with each other. Like, families, for the most part, are not very supportive of schools and education. I think schools have been definitely painted in a negative light for a long time. And so therefore I could see how some school administrators don't necessarily want to bring the bad news to light sometimes when they're dealing with parents. So again, there's like a whole ball of wax there. And then the last thing, dealing with like, fire drills, lockdown drills and things of that nature. Like, what's the other one we had to do where you exit the school, an evacuation. So evacuation drills, lockdown drills. That, I would say, like, I would never say to my students, like, right now we're practicing if there was a school shooting. Like, nobody is saying that. You know what I mean? So I don't think that, I mean, again, I shouldn't say, I can't speak for everybody, but I can't imagine that there's a teacher out there who is like, okay, boys and girls, right now we're going to all hide under our desks as if someone was shooting our school. Like, absolutely not, you know? So I don't think that it's
you say that, but I could see them being like, well, because, you know, we have a Republican and in office, they're passing gun laws. And so people are,
I don't know. I don't think so. I think that, you know, teachers really are like definitely staying. I can't imagine any teacher who's not staying neutral and wanting to bring up politics and all kinds of things like that into the classroom. It's just not, you know, I think that for the most part, you know, teachers really don't want anything coming into the room that's going to stir up a lot of like, well, my parents believe this and this. And that. It's just like, you know, who wants to open that can of worms? So I would say the way that it's
done. I mean, you see the TikTok videos or whatever of the teachers talking about all sorts of things that you wouldn't think that they'd be talking about. But again, back to the majority are not doing that.
I don't look on TikTok, so I don't know what you see.
I was banned from TikTok, but I think every now and then a TikTok video gets sent to me from somebody and it doesn't allow me to view it.
Well, I can't imagine that. But like you said, you know, there are people out there. But listen, that's why they make it on TikTok or on the news or whatever, because they're doing something that is extremely bizarre. So like that's why people are paying attention to that one person. So I would say I don't think that it's a real traumatizing experience. I can't speak for all kids. For some, you know, maybe it is. But I would say the way that it was presented in my room was, you know, the principal is going to come on the loudspeaker in a few minutes and he's going to say we're in a lockdown drill. When the principal says that, it's just like when we practice for a fire drill. It just means that if we had to, you know, like our doors are already locked because, you know, obviously in the last decade or so, in light of things that have happened, safety measures, you know, the classrooms are automatically, they lock from the outside. Like they're not locked from the inside, but they're locked from the outside. So I'm not even saying like, oh, the door is locked because it's always locked.
So your classroom door is always locked from
the outside of the room. Like no one can get in without.
So you can get out. Nobody can get in.
Yes. Okay. Yes, exactly. So the door's already locked. Nothing's happening. But all I do that would be different than anything else is I would just shut the lights and say, you know, when the principal says that we're in a lockdown drill, it just means that if there was for any reason anything unsafe that we wanted to stay in our classroom in place and know that we're safe, we would just be in here and we would come together and I would kind of bring them over like to like, let's say a corner behind my bookcase and say we would just kind of sit here until he came back on and said everything was fine. And of course, sometimes you have a kid who's like, most of the times you'll have a kid who'd be like, well, why would it be unsafe? Like, why would we do that? And I would always say to them, like, listen, this school has been here for 100-something years and nothing has ever happened and we've never had a lockdown and I've personally taught here for 20 years and we've never had a real lockdown. But, you know, if there, let's say a dog got loose and a dog was running around the hallways and they didn't know if it was safe, or let's say a stranger came into our building, you know, strangers aren't supposed to be here. The school's only for the children, the people who work here, and our parents if they have to come get us. But let's say a stranger came in and my principal didn't know who that person was. So they decided to do a lockdown drill until they could find that person and ask them what they're doing here. So I would just kind of, you know, try to, I'm definitely not bringing up guns, shooting, violence, because I don't think that's appropriate, you know, right. to talk about yeah. that kind of thing with children. And that's something that they, you know, if parents want to talk about that and have that conversation, that happens at home. But this is just a safety drill. This is just a measure. And I would just say to them, it's just like we've never had a fire at the school, but every year we do fire drills, because in case of an emergency, you want to be used to a procedure that will keep you safe. So we mm-hmm. just do these things as practice. And we would also do an evacuation drill once a year, which is we would have to leave the building, and there was another school like right next door. So we would leave the building and walk into that school and just wait in that school until they said, okay, come back. We would like wait in their auditorium. And same thing, I would just say, you know, if something happened in our school and we had to leave and wait until it was safe to come back, maybe, you know, we don't know if there's smoke in the school or something in the school that's making, you know, something that's polluting the air. Like we would leave and we'd walk next door and we would just wait here. And honestly, the kids kind of, they would ask the questions and then they kind of thought it was funny, you know, like, oh, we're all huddled here, like in the dark together, sitting close and being quiet until Mr., you know, on the announcements that, you know, we can start talking again. And I never had a child seem upset. I never had anyone crying or like, you know, this is because, you know, schools aren't safe. I never had yeah. that happen. I'm sure when you're dealing with maybe middle school and high school, I don't know what kind of drills they do at that level. And obviously right. those kids are more aware and more familiar with what's happening in the news and stuff. So that's a different conversation that I can't speak to, because I've only taught, you know, 5 through 8-year-olds or 9-year-olds. So I've never been in that, in those shoes. Yeah. But yeah, that really was never something that entered my mind. Like, oh, if my daughter goes to school, she's going to have to do these drills and I don't want that. I honestly never even thought about it, because it was just, again, it's something we do once or twice a year. It's not like it's happening often. And it's like, it's never really a huge conversation in terms of safety and politics and all of that. Like, that has not really ever entered the room. So.
Well, that's good.
That's my experience.
Now, yeah. What do you do at freechildhood.com? What is, if you want to let people know where they can find you and kind of what you do there, that would be great.
Okay. Yeah, so I think when I landed on homeschool, I thought that kind of my journey was an interesting one, because I went from public school teacher to homeschooler. So I just thought, like, the irony of that, I wanted to be able to talk about it and share about it. So I started a blog on freechildhood.com that I don't think anybody actually reads, because I don't know if anybody reads blogs, but it was kind of just like a place. And then it started, like, I started to think about things that sometimes parents ask me, or just common things, like, you know, a lot of parents have issues with math, like teaching math and how, you know, how, like, what works. And I, you know, so I would sometimes just think, like, get an idea for, like, oh, let me do a blog post about some of the math manipulatives I love, or like math games that we play. And it just kind of became a place for me to express and share, you know, what our family does, what I, you know, kind of what I live for, what I believe in. Mm-hmm. And, so then I created an Instagram, freechildhood365. I had to add the 365 because I got hacked when I was free childhood. But freechildhood365, and it was just, again, posting our normal everyday life, and, you know, sometimes showing, like, oh, this is my blog, because I kind of wanted people to know about it and go yeah. there. But I think I probably had 5 readers, you know? I mean, it's like, it's a little disheartening sometimes. Like, you're like, why am I
writing
this?
But it's one of those things that it's always there. So as homeschooling grows bigger and bigger and people know about it, it'll always be there for people to go back to read. Because I think that about the podcast sometimes too. I'm like, was looking at the numbers like, wait, we had 600 listeners on that episode and last week there were only 200. But I'm like, well, but it's always there and people are always kind of, I don't always listen to the podcast that I listen to every single week. It's like when I get a break and can and go back to it. And that's the beautiful part about the blogs and the podcast. They're always there for people to go to, you know, as time allows.
Yeah. And I'm glad I have the website, because now, like, you know, now that I'm homeschooling full time, like I said, I have a girl who comes over one day a week. So then I was like, you know what, let me make a, you know, a part of my website devoted to like what our homeschool looks like. And maybe other local parents will find this and ask if they could drop off their child for a couple of hours, you know, whatever. And then it grows. And it's like now, you know, like I said, now I'm doing something I believe in and I'm passionate about. And maybe I can make a little money while I'm getting to homeschool my daughter.
Right.
So it's like the website does give me that opportunity to like put highlight some of those things. And, you know, so I have that on there. I put up like I have a lot of free resources on there that over time as I was trying to like get people to the blog and build an audience, I would say, well, let me put up some of the math stuff that I use, or let me put up some phonics things that I've used, and maybe, you know, it'll generate a little buzz. But I, you know, so I do have a lot of free resources in my shop. And I also last year spent a lot of time creating a digital course for parents, which has 6 modules that really talk about almost everything we talked about today. So it's like a module about, like you said, you and your husband were kind of outlining your goals and what you want to accomplish, like through your homeschool journey with mm-hmm. your kids. That's really what the first module is all about.
Oh, cool.
There's a second module about different homeschool styles. So like we said, Waldorf, Montessori, Charlotte Mason. And so this course is really for parents who are new to homeschooling, or maybe they've been homeschooling, but they just feel like they want to mix it up and it's not going. Like maybe it's not the homeschool of their dreams, right? So it's like videos for the parents to watch, not for the kids, but for the parents. And the 6 modules each have about 5 videos, but it gives them, you know, a workbook and things that they can kind of work through and really identify, like, what are my goals? What is the, what do we want our path to look like? Is there something we align with that can kind of help us and help us sketch out what our daily routine is going to look like? There's a module about learning outside of the home because, like I said, that's what we're passionate about, like trying to get out and learn in the real world. So it gives a lot of ideas for how to do that and how to tie it in with academic areas. Mm-hmm. And then I have one about math and reading because I think those are always the big ones that parents are concerned about. So I give, you know, some of my background expertise on how to maybe help those things lock into place a little bit better than just relying on the workbook. Like you said, like you're on the workbook page and you're like, oh my God, why is it saying this is review? I don't even know if my kid knows this. We've only taught this this way and now it looks like this. Mm-hmm. So this is kind of giving parents a better foundation to work from instead of like just trying to open the workbook page and follow what it says. Okay. It's about like building your own capacity. So I spend like, you know, 5 lessons in reading and 5 lessons in math trying to help you kind of like build your capacity in what is the foundational skills and knowledge that you need. And then you can pick resources, and I give you suggestions for those, but then you can pick resources that support them without just blindly trying to like follow this curriculum that may or may not really be serving your family. And then the final module is actually sitting down and doing some lesson planning together. So those are the modules I put together. I created this course. Again, I had my website, so I was able to post it up on there, but I haven't really been great about selling it. I'm not like, my expertise is in education and teaching and I want to help parents. My expertise is not in marketing and, you know, building a following and, you know, it's just, yeah. It's so hard in today's world. Like you're a needle in a haystack.
That's its only, that's a job just, you know, to post on Instagram 3 times a week. That doesn't seem like a lot, but it is when you get into like, oh, well, a reel, you have to. Even to pull it from the podcast, it's like you got to find the right clip and then, you know, have like videos need overlays and, you know, other pictures coming in and text and caption. And then you have to like write the podcast is enough.
And my full-time job is being a mother. And now I'm like I'm taking on her education.
Yeah.
So it's like that consumes mostly probably, you know, 18 hours out of my 24. It's like this, you know, so this other stuff, it's like you're trying to squeeze in these nuggets. And like you said, they're full-time jobs on their own. So mm-hmm. I don't know how people are doing it and making it work. I know a lot of people have a team or help, but like when you're first starting out, I don't know how you do it. So I've tried to kind of spin all these plates and put things in place, but nothing has really like, you know, hit it. And it's just kind of like, all right, it's there. And like you said, maybe one day it goes somewhere and maybe it doesn't. Yeah. But, you know, I did create things that I felt that, you know, I believe in this and I think it could help people. And I think a lot of people have these questions, but it is hard to get that kind of stuff out there to like a broader audience. I mean, it's just, and like you said, I was consistently posting on Instagram every single day for about 2 years because I'm like, I've got to try to build this. Mm-hmm. And guess what? After doing that, I still have under 1,000 followers, like 30 people maybe seeing my posts. Like you click on the insights and you see 4 people saw this post and you're like, you know, and it just becomes like, why am I taking away time from my daughter?
Exactly.
Or when she's sleeping and it's like, finally, I have a minute to myself. Now I'm like wrapped up in my phone. Like, that's not what I want to be doing. Right?
Yeah. I've asked people that have like 80,000 followers, I have asked like, hey, how did you get that? And I think there are people you can pay and they do stuff. But then it's like, if you're on a one income, you know, it's not cheap. Or else everybody would have 80,000 followers. So
yeah,
that's why
I don't think I would invest the money there because even if you end up getting the followers, there's no guarantee that you're actually going to make any money. And I don't know. Yeah. I don't understand it. I'm not a social media girl. I'm not a tech person. I mean, developing that course was, I was starting from scratch, like square one. Like I didn't know how to use anything, you know, like, and it was a lot of work and I was working my full-time job and using my lunch time, my lunch, you know, I would say lunch hour, but as a teacher, you don't get an hour, you get 40 minutes. So I was using my 40 minutes of lunch every day to work on it. And it was, I didn't want to work on it when I was home because I had such limited precious time with my daughter. Mm-hmm. So it was a hardship for sure. And I'm glad it's done. It was kind of like, okay, I did that and I accomplished it. But it would be nice if someone bought it one day.
They will.
It would be nice if someone else saw it. So well, I know if it's any good.
And as our kids get older and do more things that are like more self-sufficient. I mean, I have a 1-year-old, so it's like to even to put her to bed last night, I went to go work on getting a video snippet and she's like looking for, you know, a boob within 20 minutes. Yeah. I'm like,
I know. And it's just the season that we're in. So it is. It's like,
but you know what? Yeah, we can have it all, just not all at the same time. So
I'm going to remember that. I love that. That's going to be like my biggest takeaway from today.
Oh, God. Well, Nikki, thank you so much for being here. Where can people find you?
So on Instagram, I'm FreeChildhood365. I did start a Facebook group. It's called Free Childhood. And my website is freechildhood.com. So, and I'm Nicole at Free Childhood if anybody wants to send me an email. And I love to chat with other homeschoolers. It just gives me a lot of inspiration, a lot of knowledge.
I will put all of those links in the show's description so people can just hop right in there and click on them. Thank you so much, Nicole. It's been awesome talking to you today.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's episode of The Homeschool How-To. If you've enjoyed what you heard and you'd like to contribute to the show, please consider leaving a small tip using the link in my show's description. Or, if you'd rather, please use the link in the description to share this podcast with a friend or on your favorite homeschool group Facebook page. Any effort to help us keep the podcast going is greatly appreciated. Thank you for tuning in and for your love of the next generation.